Welcome to the Women's Utilities Network One for All podcast, our corner of the world where we'll be talking all things energy, water, sharing personal stories and debating female issues. Enjoy.
So hello and welcome to another episode of the Women's Utility Network podcast. My name is Julia Stichling and I'm one of the advocates here at The One. I'm so happy to be joined for today's podcast recording by Amina Shafiq, Technical Specialist at 7Trend. Welcome, Amina.
Hiya, Julia. Are you okay?
Good, thank you. I'm really, really excited to speak to you today. And I'd like to start out by, can you tell us a bit more about your career journey to date and a little bit more about your current role as a Technical Specialist at 7Trend?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I just want to start off by saying thank you for having me on the podcast. So at the moment, I'm a technical specialist at 7Trend. So I work in the public health and standards team. Maybe about a year ago, I was a senior advisor in the same team. So I've had a promotion. And what technical specialist means is that I manage the reactive duty desk. So in my job, I assess water quality problems. So if there's any failure, so we routinely sample like around our network, all the way from our source waters through our treatment process and our customers taps, and we assess those water quality failures. If there's any events in our network, they come through to us. So there's a lot of incident management and, you know, water quality risk assessments. So at the moment I manage the duty desk, but before I used to actually be a senior advisor on the duty desk. Before that, I went to Aston University. I studied chemical engineering. That was all the way from 2015 to 2019, and in between then I had a undergraduate placement. So like I did a sandwich year, and that sandwich year was at 7Trend as well. So that's how I initially got my foot into the door, got into the company, and then I'm still here. And then in about a month's time, I'm actually moving job roles again. I didn't tell you that before because I had an interview a few weeks ago, and now I'm going to be moving to become an innovation specialist as part of the asset intelligence and innovation department.
Amazing. Well, congratulations, first of all. That's going to be really, really cool, isn't it?
I'm not too sure what the job entails, but I just know that you never know until you start. But I know that it's all like upcoming technology. So anything that they can use to fix water quality problems, either the wayside or the like clean water side. So it's like a lot of new innovative technologies and implementing different techniques of different water companies, even in different parts of the world. So it's going to be really interesting. I can't wait.
Amazing. And have you got an exact starting date already, or is it still to
be? So the countdown one is actually my last day in exactly a month's time from today.
Oh, wow.
So my last day is on the 26th of April, and then I start my new job the following Monday on the 29th.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Good. So you mentioned that you kind of fell a bit into the water industry with your undergraduate placement. I know that some time ago you were also on the BBC Bite Size explaining the water industry to kids. And I think it's really something amazing to kind of take the time, explain it to the industry, to kids, because we need the new talent, we need new people to join. What better way to give an insight than actually going into a school or on program like the BBC Bite Size? How was that experience for you?
It was a really good experience. I think more for the sort of conversations initially came about. I thought, oh, I'm going to be helping kids, but I didn't realize that how much it would help me when I went out to speak to these kids. So BBC got in touch and they were doing this roadshow where they'd want people from, like, I work in Coventry, but I'm also from Birmingham, and they asked for people who work around that locality to come in and just talk about their career. The people who I was on the panel were from Jaguar Land Rover doing graduate schemes, and just all around, like, loads and loads of different backgrounds, loads of different careers. And what I found was, when I was speaking to these kids, no one tells you how much there is out there, if that makes sense. So when we grow up, we're always, oh, you have to go into a specific field, or you've got to do something specific, either become a doctor, engineer, scientist, something like that. And no one tells you how many roles there are behind the scenes. So growing up, I would never have thought, oh, I'm going to be a senior advisor one day in public health and standards team. When I open the tap, I take my glass, I fill it up with water, and I go about my day. You don't actually realize how much goes into getting that water to come out of that tap, and how much treatment goes into it, and how it would actually blow your mind. I could talk about water all day long just because of how much goes into it. When I was speaking to these kids, exactly how I was going about it, like I'd say, you just think that you open your tap, you fill up your glass of water, you go about your day, and it's all fine, but that's not actually the case. This is what we do. So there's a team that is dedicated to risk assessing failures if anything kicks off, the team dedicated to making sure the water supply is always on, the team dedicated to making sure our source water is always at its best quality, and just everywhere. Then there's the finance department, you've got a HR department, you've got a procurement department, you've got so many different departments that make up this huge company, but all it's known for is providing water. So it's just like there's so much to it. And then I think, so the schools that I went to, they were from deprived backgrounds. So I grew up in a deprived area, and it was a school close to me, so similar to the area I'd grown up in. And again, you just see these kids, and they're so eager to learn and willing to learn because they kind of want to make it out of this area and make something of their lives. So it's good to talk to them, because growing up, I didn't really have that. I would have loved if someone came to my school. I would have been excited because it would have been the BBC. You see the BBC on TV, don't you? So that would have excited me. And then for people to sit there and chat to you and say, no, there's so much more out there. It's not just this role or like this specific thing. There's a lot of behind the scenes role that go into making these things. And I think I loved sharing that because it's also similar to what I did in my degree. So engineering, again, is very behind the scenes, especially chemical engineering. It's like turning raw material into a product, and no one really sees the work of a chemical engineer until you start to look into it a bit more. So it's just to show the kids out there, or like anyone who's growing up, teenagers or whatnot, that there's not any specific route in life. You can go get your degree and be open to millions of jobs out there. And that's why I really enjoyed it, because it was really eye-opening to me, because I was like, I wish I had this when I was growing up. And then you see the effect on the kids as well, like they're really engaged when you're speaking to them, they're asking you questions, they're really interested in what you do. So yeah, that was nice.
I can imagine. And I think it's also, from my viewpoint, I think it's also important for kids to see someone like me, so I can do it as well. It's not that far-fetched, apart from obviously the industry being something that they're not aware of and they don't know really.
Yeah.
It's also like, oh, I could go to uni and I could go that role, and I can be an engineer, I can work in whatever industry. And like you said, with other people on the panel as well, it's not just, oh, I could be in water, but I could be at Land Rover, I could be here, I could be anywhere. I think that's quite important to represent that diversity as well.
I think even, I'm sure with the podcast, it'll be like a portrait or picture of me, but like I wear a headscarf. So I'm a brown Muslim woman who wears a headscarf. And it was so nice because there was another, I think she was about 16, 17 years old, first year of sixth form, I think. And she came up to me and she's similar, like, you know, headscarf, Muslim woman. And she asked me, she said, how did you get through engineering? Because I was explaining back when I was at uni in 2018, 2019, it was very male dominated. I was probably one of the only girls on the course. It's a lot better now, but she was the only Muslim girl in her engineering class at the time. And she said, she came over and asked me for advice, like, how did you get through it? And, you know, what did you do? How did you make sure that your voice was known and everyone appreciated and accepted your ideas? And it was just nice to have that conversation on someone younger. I felt like very influential. And especially being there in a headscarf and stuff, people will look at you and think, oh, there's someone like me who's in that industry as well. Maybe it's an option for me. It is exactly that.
Absolutely. And I think trying not only to mirror that you can do it, but also showing that the diversity in your team probably helps your team to perform better, to be more inclusive and try and take decisions from a different angle, because you get different viewpoints in as well.
I think even with general life, for me, I work in a corporate office, but part of my role is to go out on site and wear the PPE and stuff like that. So I've never seen that before. Again, when I joined Severn Trent back in 2019, that was something that I had never come across. So it's nice to see someone who looks like you again in uniform workwear that you'd never see them in. It's like when you see a doctor or a nurse but with a headscarf. And then there was this show on Disney Plus, because I love the Marvel franchise, and they've got this show. She doesn't wear a headscarf. It's called Miss Marvel. I'm not sure.
Miss Marvel, I know it.
And she's literally my back, like Pakistani background, and she becomes this superhero. And for someone like me growing up, even at 26 years old, I watched that show and I'm like, wow, that could be me. And then in the show, there's her friend, she's a hijabi. I feel like unless you grow older and you look to the upcoming generation, you don't actually realize how influential you could be just by existing in a certain industry and representing it. So honestly, it is really, really important to have that in any industry, have like representation of all different backgrounds in any industry.
Well, I mean, you're somewhat of a superstar as well, because you then took matters to your own hand and you decided to design a headscarf PPE a couple of years ago, the first of its kind, because that hadn't existed before. How did you come up with the idea, and what's happened since then?
I was waiting until you were going to mention that. So basically, as I mentioned before, when I joined in 2019, part of my role was going out on site, water quality audits and all that sort of stuff. And I realized that when I had this workwear on, so we were given the safety boots, the safety helmet, the goggles and all of that, and high-vis jackets. But when I wear my scarf, there's lots of loose material in order for us to wrap it around our head. And when I was on site, I was finding that I was constantly tucking it into my high-vis jacket and then zipping up the high-vis jacket. Because when you're on an industrial site, again, unless you're there, you won't realize that there's these huge assets, so there's big fans and blowers, and when you're walking past them, it was always that anxiety of what if something gets stuck, and then obviously it's a really scary thought. So I think it was during COVID, it was 2021 during COVID, I was just sitting there and I was thinking, what if there was something that would be a bit more snug, it would have minimal loose material. I've seen it in athletic headscarves, so Nike did something similar where they've just minimalized the whole hijab and not there's no loose material on it. So it's a similar sort of concept. I thought, let's bring it into PPE, and then that's how the idea came about, just because of my own struggles really. So initially it was a selfish idea. No, I'm just kidding, it was never a selfish idea. I always thought there's people like me who I know that there's people who are doing a similar degree to me, they will start coming into this industry and it needs to be a bit more inclusive, and I don't want someone like me to have the same fear where you're walking past a fan or something and you're thinking, am I even safe at work, because it could literally just pull me in and turn me into mincemeat. That was the idea behind that. And then the way I went about it was I emailed a few people and they put me in touch with the PPE manager of our company, who then put me in touch with a third party, and then they created the headscarf. So they made a prototype of it, sent me over the prototype, I gave feedback, and then from there we just rolled it out, and then it became quite a big thing on social media, and then BBC wanted to speak to me and loads of other news outlets internationally as well. Since then I've won a load of awards for it as well, so that was something huge for me. But it was literally my experiences that got me to create something. It gained momentum because so many people related to the lack of diversity in our industry and the lack of diversity when it comes to personal protective equipment, and you know how people hold back with, I guess, applying for jobs in this sort of industry just because of that fear that their sort of work or their background, their personal background, religious background, race, culture won't allow them to work in such a setting. And I guess that's what resonated with a lot of people, and that's why it became as big as it did. But yeah, very proud.
No, I think you should be very, very proud, because it's a massive achievement. And I mean, obviously you developed it out of your own necessity, like you said, but you with that now help probably, you know, hundreds, thousands of women that can now wear a hijab while being on site, and more importantly, being safely on site, because I'm on site quite often as well myself, and I know when PPE doesn't fit properly and you've got to tuck something in and it doesn't work. And so I can understand that you felt like, oh, there might be a risk if it doesn't fit properly that I get stuck somewhere, it gets held up something. So yeah, it is a very valid reason to say I need to do something about it.
And the thing is, whilst we all choose to come from a certain faith or come from a certain background, this is part of my faith. Like, I wear a headscarf to identify as a Muslim. So it shouldn't be that I'm not allowed to do that because it means I can't do my job properly. And similarly, it means I shouldn't, just because of my headscarf, I can't apply for a certain job. And even saying hundreds and thousands of people, I know that the story's been exposed to loads and loads of people and lots of people know of it. But even if it inspired one like Muslim girl to think, oh, see someone like me in the industry, I want to do engineering now. That's all that matters from it, honestly.
No, I totally get it. I think it's a very brave thing to just take the courage and say, what can I do differently to make a change? So yeah, well done for you.
Thank you.
I think, how has that now been adopted also within Seven Trends? So is that PPE hijab now part of Seven Trends overall offering on PPE for women?
Yeah. So as soon as it got rolled out, it became part of our catalogue. And then, so the catalogue is a third party catalogue. So it's Holtar's PPE catalogue. So that's not just used in Seven Trends. It's actually used a lot more widely. So I know that Anglian Water wanted the headscarf in their PPE catalogue. And then a load of other companies have gotten in touch, like consultancy companies and engineering companies, and they've also gone and implemented it in their catalogs as well. So Seven Trends implemented it straight away really, and it's widely available now. So any team manager, when there's some team manager, they come to me and ask me, is it still available? I was like, yeah, of course, because they had like an intern starting in their team who wore a headscarf. You can just order it now and it'll come just as you can order any other garment from the catalog.
Perfect. Well, that's really the perfect situation then. So if you look at your own career in the in the utility industry, what other steps of inclusion would you like to see within the industry?
I think for me, obviously, Islam is one of the biggest religions out there, but there's so many other religions, cultures that wear certain clothing to identify as part of that background. So for me, it would be like a deep dive into different cultures, how we can kind of make the workwear more inclusive, but also the workplace more inclusive. People have different backgrounds. I think female PPE is something that definitely needs a lot of work. And even at Severn Trent, I think we're working on it and have made quite a lot of progress with getting the right sizing. I know that a few years ago, maybe even a decade or so ago, it used to be men's PPE that we'd have to wear. So men's polo shirts, men's jackets, and they were really oversized and not fitted to the woman's body, which is completely different to a man's body, isn't it? So working on that and making sure, say, for example, UK sizes, we have 8, 10, 12, 14, having PPE that's those sizes rather than small, medium, large, because that's what we relate to. That's what's going to fit us more. PPE that aligns with your body contour, and also like the boots, having shoes that fit right. I think that's where we need to just make it as inclusive as possible. So if you know that there's a certain religion that has a certain piece of clothing or a certain culture, try and see how can we adapt that and implement it into the PPE catalogue to make it available for people who might want a role like this.
Yeah, because I think overall in the end, it's about retaining the best talent and making those accommodations where possible to make a job suitable to them and to allow them, well, we want you to be safe on site, but equally we don't want you to compromise who you are and what you stand for in a certain way. So I think it's finding that balance, isn't it, about what do you need and what can we do for you?
Exactly, because like I said, this industry that we work in is very male dominated, or in the past has been very, very male dominated. So you have to kind of find why that is. You've got to dive into that and kind of understand what is it about this industry that makes women not want to join it, or make people of ethnic backgrounds not want to come in and experience a role or a job here. And then when you start to look into it, it's this sort of stuff that comes up. PPE is not appropriate, or it's not comfortable because I don't see people like myself there, or I don't see people of a different background there. I just see a certain type of race, and I have I've experienced racism in this industry, stuff like that. Once you start to look into it and you start to find a lot of problems, I think that's what we're doing at the moment, and then trying to overcome them and make it as inclusive as possible.
Yeah, because I myself, as I said before, I'm on site quite often, and at the beginning it wasn't something that I felt very comfortable with being on site, because I've not seen many women on site in PPE, because site experiences wasn't something that I knew before coming into the industry. So at the beginning I felt like, oh my god, is this going to fit properly, is it going to be comfortable? Now I'm just like, I've got adjusted to it and it's a bit more comfortable, everything. But yeah, I'm totally with you. If we're able to make it more fitting and better fitting, then it would create that better inclusion for everyone, really.
100%. I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, but women are a lot more self-conscious as well. For example, if I'm wanting to zip up my jacket, it's going to be tighter on me around my hips than on higher up. And obviously that men don't have that problem, and that's exactly the problem I have with my high vis at the moment, because it's a men's high vis. When I'm zipping it up, it's really tight around my hip, so it struggles to get up, and then the rest of it's fine. So, and it looks really weird because all of it will be loose and then it'll be really tight around my hips. And obviously with the way I dress, it's very modest and I like everything very loose fitting. It kind of goes against that because it's tight around my hips. That's like the area you don't want people to look at. So it is that if people came forward with their experiences like they have done. And we've got a women in STEM advisory group here, and they've come forward with those sorts of ideas and they're working on getting better PPE for women.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in the same boat. My high-vis jacket has an elastic band on the bottom, so when you put it on first, it'll fit fine, and then when you start moving, it'll go up to your like belly button. Exactly. We need to find a solution for
that. And then it just sits on top of your hips, and then it's like, the thing is, when you're out on site as well, you can't really adjust it that much constantly, because you're out on site because you're doing some sort of manual labor or working on something, so you can't just constantly be adjusting your clothes. You just need something that works for you. I think we need more of these so that we can just talk about all the problems we have with our PPE.
Absolutely, because I think if we address it, then people will realize that something needs to be changed, something needs to be adapted. And the more we speak about, for example, what you said, what you do in your women's STEM group internally, that helps to address the topic within Severn Trent. And that's one of the reasons as well why the Women's Utility Network exists, because we want women to join the utility industry and then stay and thrive in it and literally build their career and be happy. So we're trying to share stories and experiences to make women feel, well, it's not just me, it's other women out there as well. Mm-hmm. And if they can do it, I can do it as well equally.
I think that's the main message, isn't it?
So what would be advice that you'd give yourself if you wanted to give 16-year-old Amina some advice for her life?
I think back then when I was 16, I really didn't know what I wanted to do in my life. I knew that I had subjects I was good at. So I was good at maths and chemistry. So I knew that that would be my field. I wasn't ever like lawyer type. I wasn't ever on that sort of vibe. If I was to give myself advice, I'd just say that honestly, there's so much more to life than doing a specific degree and thinking you're going to go into that field. I've done an engineering degree, which is one of the professions that's forced into your face, but I did it out of choice. I was never forced to do it. But it's just, if I knew that doing an engineering degree would get me here, would I have gone about it a different route? I don't know. Because in the end, you're just going to get what you're meant to get anyway. So that's the advice I'd give. I'd just be like, just go with the flow. Don't stress about anything. There's a lot more jobs out there than you think of right now. Than what school tells you. School gives you a very specific route. Go to school, go to college, go to university, get a degree in a very specific field, but it's not that black and white. You can go to school and you can get an apprenticeship. You can go to school and then get a degree. But then I met someone who was like a project manager in a gas company, and she had a degree in animal care. So that's completely different. And you think it's such a specific, narrow degree subject that you can only go into animal care, but she was this project manager in a gas company, completely different field. So it's just that you need to meet people who have done something but taken a different career path. And I think that's what I would tell myself. Like, I wouldn't stress about it at that age.
I think that's a very, very good suggestion for young people, hopefully listening to this as well, because there will be a route. And if you give it some time, obviously find something that you love and then try and pursue that interest. And then the rest will kind of fall in place.
And that's it. And I think even with the upcoming generation now, I'm hoping that with all the work that we're doing, because again, compared to a few years ago, there wasn't a lot of attention on diversity and inclusion. And I think now that there is, I'm hoping that this generation that are coming into the industry now will have it a lot more easier. Back when I was 16, it probably wasn't the case. So again, I would just say, just don't stress about it. It'll all work out in the end.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today. It was really, really interesting and inspiring to speak to you.
Thank you for having me.
No, you're welcome. And thank you to all our listeners as well.